Welcome to the No Shot Clock Podcast. This is episode 4. I'm Michael Bryan from the Sun-Times, here with Joe Henriksen, as every week. First off, wanted to get some housekeeping out of the way. The podcast is available on iTunes. I saw a lot of you guys have been listening on there. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can get it every week as soon as we get it up. Please, if you get a chance, rate us and review us on iTunes. That'll help bring in some more listeners. And we're also available on Stitcher, which is another great way to listen to the podcast on the go. So we're going to start right off, get things going with the CPS shootout, the public league shootout at Whitney Young on Sunday. Joe and I were both there. It was a pretty fun event. There were 5 conference rivalry games all played at Whitney Young. So it was a new idea, a new format the CPS tried this year. What'd you think, Joe?
I thought it was cool in a lot of different ways. I was a fan of it. I took a lot of conversation from both public league coaches, you know, media people, college coaches, diehard basketball fans. And there were some negatives and positives in their views. But overall, for me, I think it's a good idea in different ways. One, from a fan standpoint and generating interest among fans, I think it really opened some doors for those fans to see public league basketball in a different type of environment that they're more comfortable going to. And the timing of it, you know, a Sunday, you know, back-to-back-to-back-to-back games as opposed to a late afternoon, early evening and a far south side gym. So in that regard, I think it was a big plus. I just think it was a big positive in terms of fans being able to see public league basketball games that they not normally are able to get to. The format for me was, you know, is long. I mean, that is a long day. But I enjoyed it. I thought, and it helped that they had like a marquee game to wrap it all up with Morgan Park and Simeon. But overall, I think it's a good idea. I don't think they want to abuse it and do it over and over again. But I do think once a year type thing is a great idea. And I like the location. I know some of the South, you know, the Red South schools probably are like, you know, I know in your article, Mike, I think Nick Irvin was quoted as saying, you know, I wish we could play this on the South side, but I liked the change of venue.
Yeah, I think everything you said is definitely true. It was a success, and it opens those games up to some people who normally wouldn't get a chance to see them. The crowd was great. I mean, people had a good time. It's not my type thing. I had a good time. It was good basketball. It's not like it was the Chicago Elite Classic to me, where it was just something kind of annoying that I wouldn't mind if it went away. But to me, it's not high school basketball. It's taking high school basketball and trying to make it like AAU basketball, where you put something in a safe, sterile, boring environment so that people who evaluate things can go watch. It's taking it away from the communities, and it's taking it away, most importantly, from the students. There weren't any vocational fans there. I mean, if you go to vocational, what could be better than the day Luan Pipkins comes to your school and you get to go for free after school and watch Luan Pipkins play? And that's true for every school that was in that event. And I just don't think that's right. I don't think it's what high school basketball should be. And so that's my big problem with it. And I think for everybody that was there and had a good time, there were 10 kids, heck, there were 50, 100 kids at each of those schools that missed out on what should be a big event in their high school life. And I think when you do that, you start to jeopardize really the future of the sport. If you start taking high school sports away from high school kids and building new fans and kids that aren't on the team and kids that just want to go to the game. And so I think it's really not something we want to do a ton of in the future. Although I think it will, because it was a success. The other thing I'll say is, and I think this is kind of interesting, can you imagine at a game at Simeon, or if Morgan Park had a big gym, them letting Whitney Young headline at their gym? I mean, to me, I guess, you know, give Tyrone Slaughter some credit for that. You know, he let it happen. I mean, I can't imagine it happening the other way around. So that was interesting to me, sort of, you know, from a coach kind of perspective. But yeah, overall, I want high school basketball to be played in high school gyms. I don't really care for these events that to me are kind of just moneymakers.
It was still a high school gym, man. But I mean, I know what you're saying. I agree. I wouldn't want more of it. And I agree that you're taking it. Any other aspect of it that some coaches are I mean, you lose a home game. You lose a very important home game. And I don't know by school who lost their home game. I think Morgan Park lost their home game. I think Hyde Park lost their home game. So now these are your big rivals and their biggest games, and you lose your home game, you got to go to the other school's gym. That's a tough pill to swallow when you're trying to win a coveted, you know, section championship. So, you know, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I do. I wouldn't want more of it, but I do think it's personally good for the public league in different ways. One, it went off without a hitch. I mean, there was very, you know, everything was on time. They were spaced out a lot, but I just think it shined a bright light on the public league, that one day event that otherwise sometimes is neglected a little bit. And I think public league coaches and public league in general would say, hey, we get a lot of negative crap talked about what goes on. Let's enjoy some positivity. Although on one note, can we get away from the whole announcement of the eligibility sheets at the beginning of the games?
I think that's one of the best things they've done in years.
Oh, yuck, Mike. It's like you're glamorizing, highlighting a black eye.
It's PR. I mean, it's PR 101. You have to show that you fixed it. You have to. Yeah. They're not going to do this forever.
Just do it. Just go do it.
Yeah, I was fine with it.
Why we gotta promote? Hey, it was almost like we were mocking it. we're exchanging them now. Nah, maybe one time. I don't know. I just hope that goes away. Maybe it's just a one-time deal.
I mean, they didn't do it at the Kenwood King. Now, they did do the exchange at the Kenwood King game, you know, just a normal public league game, not this event. They didn't, like, announce everybody. But I think the point was really clear. They had a horrible year where basically there's no proof that anyone was eligible, and basically the entire season should have been forfeited. And so you need to address that. They didn't fire anybody. No heads rolled. They made some, you know, administrative changes. And at their big first event, they highlighted the change that they're making. And I don't see anything wrong with that.
I agree with that part. I don't get why we got to highlight it. But the more important thing is what we took from yesterday's games. I mean, a couple things, Mike. I'm going to pick on you. One, DJ Williams. I know you've been waiting and waiting and waiting, and as an evaluator, I look at it as a little differently, but DJ Williams was terrific yesterday, I thought. It was the most physical and aggressive that I've seen him in a high school game. Now, I've seen bits and pieces of it this summer. I mean, I thought he played exceptionally well when I saw him in June, a few times in July, but and even this fall. I think he is starting to turn the corner, and he showed a little bit of that last night, just attacking, getting to the line. It was a great performance and a big time game for them.
Yeah, that was it. Yes, exactly. DJ Williams has not made an all area team, has not, you know, made a first or second team all city team or the all city team at all last year. You know, he averaged 9 points a year or a game. We talked about that. This was it. This is exactly what he needed to do. This is where he needed to show it. It was great. He was aggressive. Even the shots he missed, you know, were what you want to see from him, how mm-hmm. you want him to play. It was exactly what they needed. And you know what? Simeon loses that game if he doesn't play like that. You know, it's that simple.
I mean, well, their seniors stepped up. I mean, between him, Ed Morrow, and Isaiah Moss hitting, I think he had three threes, a big dunk there in transition. You know, those three seniors kind of, you know, and I even talked to Rob Smith later, and I think maybe you would agree. I thought they got kind of caught up in Morgan Park's style and the way Morgan Park plays. And I think it was a detriment to Simeon to a degree. Now, the other part of this, Morgan Park just shot the ball horribly. And they're going to have to rely on that perimeter jumper, particularly the three-point shot, when you got Marcus Levette, Jaron Randall, and Charlie Moore.
Yeah, Simeon, and we'll follow this all year. I made the bold, maybe stupid statement last podcast or two ago that if they get four threes, they'll win every game. They got their four threes. And they needed him. You know, they only missed one. Morgan Park on the other side was one for, I think, 17. And that's not going to happen very often. That was a weird Morgan Park shooting night. And they still managed to stay in the game. I think there's a reason Simeon got caught up in it. This is a different game than mm-hmm. any other game they will play. Nick Irvin knows the weaknesses of every player on Simeon's team, except for maybe DJ Williams, who he doesn't coach, you know, over the summer. And these kids know one another. This is not Lancaster, Texas, that has no idea which way Zach Norvell wants to dribble. This is Morgan Park, who knows them all very well, and it's always going to be a neighborhood rivalry. It's always going to be close. I had people telling me before the game it was going to be a blowout, that Morgan Park was going to have to play perfect to win. If Derek and Jabari came back, it would not be a 20-point blowout. That's just not ever going to happen in this game. That's not how it goes. It's always going to be close. And we saw that. It was so clean, too. There weren't really fights. You know, there was one tie-up where they got... It's just really rough, really intense, fun basketball. And that's what it was, and it's always going to be close.
Yeah, it had that intensity. It always does. And, you know, I don't know. I like Morgan Park. I just don't know how many weapons they have beyond their big two, at Charlie Moore and Marcus Levet. I think those two are going to, and I think they're capable of doing it. They're going to have to carry a huge load. And, you know, Charlie did not shoot it as well as he shot it in the past. But I think Simeon's length and size gave him a little bit of problems. But hey, again, the Red South's going to be a beast. We saw... you know, plenty of other public. The other team that jumped out at me, who is still growing, still learning, still adapting to a new coach, Kenwood. I thought Kenwood had played really well. They're still young. I mean, everybody's been hyping Kenwood, and for obvious reasons, they have some Division I talent. But you know, I thought they came and played well and took care of rather handily a key game against High Park.
Yeah, no doubt. And Jelani Sankey, I've watched him for 2 years now. That kid can shoot. And that makes a big difference in a short high school basketball game. We keep talking about that. But a guy who comes in and hits two or three threes in a game, those are such big moments. And he does that off the bench so regularly for them. Steve Williams, I thought, played better. You know, he had one kind of crazy psychopathic pass behind his back, but you know, he's calming down a little bit, so that's good. They're a threat. They're no doubt a threat. They look just like they did to me in the King game. I was impressed with them. Talking about some other teams disappointed in Uplift, you know, I ranked them in the preseason. It sounds like they know they're disappointing right now. Talking to them after the game, they moved Jeremy Roscoe to the point guard. They need him to play that. You know, they have some other scorers, and he's kind of learning that. You know, that's where he'll play in college, he thinks, so he's on board and doing his best. So I think they're not the team they might be in a month or two. They had a lot of trouble with Lincoln Park, who was a really – they're an above-average team, Lincoln Park. Nobody talks about them. They're one of those city teams that gets slighted. But they're just as good as, I think, a lot of the teams in the suburbs that get a lot more talk. They've got a lot of solid players. I thought they were impressive. I don't know. What'd you take from that game, Joe?
Well, I just don't think I can put Uplift anywhere close to being in that upper echelon of teams in the Chicago area. That's where I came away. Yeah. It's not that they're bad or weak, or they're not a threat, but they're just not there. And, jumping around again, I mean, another team that I think, if you compare to what I think we both saw them play game one, which was kind of expected game one with the youth and inexperience they had, Whitney Young back in the Chicago Elite Classic, and how poorly they played, they looked pretty good last night. They, you know, I think they have a good collection of young talent, a really good group. And Justin Boyd, a freshman, 6'3". I saw Justin Boyd in eighth grade in the AU circuit, and he's always been one to watch, and I really liked him. And there he is. He's starting Coach Tyron Slaughter as a freshman in his third game of the year. And I think he hit two or three threes. He's physically not there quite yet, but he's going to be a big weapon for Whitney Young as the season goes on. And Xavier Castaneda is a pure point guard, doesn't play a whole lot, but I think he's going to get more time. I really like Willie Harrington, sophomore, 6'2", sophomore guard. So they're a youth, and they've got a little bit of depth. You know, Joseph Toy is kind of the anchor, the only guy who gives them really any kind of size. And he played pretty well, aside from his horrendous free throw shooting. But, you know, Whitney Young is going to be a team that you look December 15th and you look January 15th, you look February 15th. I think they're going to look considerably different throughout the year.
Most likely. I'm not sure. They looked better in that performance, but they were basically playing a bunch of guys who were playing their third varsity game ever.
And, yeah, it was a little rough with Orr.
Yeah, and Orr, you know, Orr finds themselves in this big, almost full road gym, and it's most these guys have never played. This is their third game, so I'm not going to take a ton from that. I think Young's going to have a real challenge on Wednesday at Farragut.
That'd be a good one. It'll be a good old Red West game, man. The Red West is not anywhere near what's been, but that's going to be a tough. That's at Farragut.
Yeah, it's at
that'll be a tough test.
Farragut's licking their chops. They've had to deal with Okafor for the last few years,
And that's the other thing. A lot of people are licking their chops to get a little crack at Whitney Young after what they had to deal with. You know, just jumping around. I never thought I'd be talking about Willowbrook basketball, Mike, in December. They were 2-24 last year. Jumping away from yesterday's action. Friday night, I saw an individual performance that, you know, is definitely one of the top handful I've seen in this young season. Alonzo Verge Jr. He was just sensational. I mean, he had three high major coaches in the gym. I talked to all three staffs. They were all impressed as well. I mean, he had 31 points, 6 assists. Should have had 9 or 10 assists, but, you know, missed easy buckets by his teammates and or through the fingertips of other teammates. He is a really good-looking freshman, or I'm sorry, a good-looking sophomore, and one of the top 5-6 prospects in that class. And I know people wouldn't know Willowbrook basketball from whatever, but they played Hinsdale South and Barrett Benson and came up with a loss. But Alonzo Verge opened my eyes, and he's going to be one to watch and one to get out and see over the next 3 years.
Yeah, I still have not decided. On Tuesday, they play Downers South. I'm thinking about maybe going to that. I've already seen Fenwick and Hales. That's the other big game, so we'll see where I wind up. Probably go to Fenwick Hales and wait to see Alonzo Verge in a nice Tuesday night in February or something, but it sounds really exciting. It's really nice to see a lot of these guys emerging now. My big performance of the week, well, the biggest one was definitely Matt Rafferty. You know, he's somebody we've all seen a lot before, but wow, it was just amazing. I'd never seen him shoot like that. He hit, I think, 4 for 4 from 3. One was from half court. But the real Rafferty is in the Player of the Year conversation just based on what he's done so far and what Hinsdale Central's done so far. I think it is up for grabs, especially with Jalen Brunson, kind of not putting up huge numbers yet. We can talk about that some other time. But the other revelation was Hinsdale Central. Wow. A lot of people had told me some stuff about them. I wasn't totally on board with their team last year, so I wasn't too sure. I was very impressed. That team has got a nice shot of going to Peoria, and they know how to play basketball. They know how to play together. They have that Maine South thing where they're smart, but they don't bore you to death. So mm-hmm. I would definitely recommend checking out Hinsdale Central. The other big performance I saw was in the Joliet West loss to Bolingbrook. Prentice Nixon was awesome. We've talked about him a little bit before, but the sophomore proved a lot to me from Joliet West. He was really impressive. Trevian Bell, I think he's going to be, when it's all said and done, maybe a top 20 guy in that class, and I think the future's a little brighter for Joliet West. Also, I left out Mooney. We've talked about Joe Mooney before. Boy, he can play, and when you see him shoot in his home gym, it's nice. He can just do so many things. Notre Dame's for real. They proved it to me in that game. It was a really, really fun high school basketball game on Saturday night.
I really like Kinsdale Central. I watched a lot of them this summer. They had the chemistry you like. They had senior leadership you like. And they got an ultra-productive high school player, Matt Rafferty. I mean, he's been a double-double guy. You know, his recruitment has been a little bit puzzling. He had some early offers, interest. It waned a little bit. He's out to kind of prove some things this year. And, you know, I think a lot of people are going to be checking in on him. He's got solid academics. So he's got a lot going for him. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where his recruitment goes between now and the spring signing period.
That sure will. That's what I was thinking about. You know, to me, I wasn't a huge fan of Duje Dukin when he was at Deerfield, you know, mm-hmm. who's at Wisconsin, but I see a lot of similarities there I didn't know Rafferty could do so much on the perimeter. That's what he really showed in this Notre Dame game with the threes, a bunch of drives to the basket. You know, he's a lot more than just a post player.
Yeah. His shot, you know, if he's knocking shot, and that's the big thing. People want to see more of a face-up four man from him, and it sounds like he hit threes. That has not been a consistent thing. His shot mechanics got to be cleaned up a little bit, but you know, at the end of the day, whether it's AAU, high school, he has found a way to produce, to put up numbers, and that's the thing, that he does not project necessarily to a certain level at the college level or a certain type of player yet. People always want, well, give me results. I want production. I want people to get things done. And he's one guy that does that. So it's going to be interesting to see just kind of how his recruitment shakes out over the course of the next 3 months.
Yep, no doubt. I think we can go right in. Hinsdale Central is going to be a big player in this. The sectional assignments were released. Sorry, the super sectional assignments and the sectional assignments, and basically the whole playoff format. We know everything except for which super sectionals are going to match up in Peoria. We won't find that out for a few months. And, you know, we won't have the exact the games and all the seeds yet, but we know who's going where, and it was pretty interesting.
I mean, there was some major, major shakeups. I mean, the big thing I noticed, well, the splitting up of the big glaring thing is the splitting up of a couple of the public league schools, notably Whitney Young and Simeon, which have been together, and now they are split apart. And, you know, it's a little bit different this year because Whitney Young isn't what Whitney Young has been. But the other thing is the north suburbs. I've heard from a lot of coaches who are really upset. And then I talk about that with the public league coaches, and they say, yeah, well, it's their turn. So, you know, if you look at that traditional Waukegan sectional or that area, that thing is loaded. I mean, up and down. I mean, and not only is it deep and loaded, you've got a king of the mountain at the top in Stevenson that everybody's got to try to knock off to get out of there. But you look up and down there with Evanston and Highland Park and Lake Forest and Niles Notre Dame and Maine South and Loyola Academy, Zion Benton. So, I mean, it is without doubt in my mind the deepest sectional in Illinois.
Yeah, I'm not buying into that. A lot of coaches tell me that too. there's what, three ranked teams in it? I don't think that's exactly the greatest.
I just think there's depth, Mike. When you look at the other sectional up in the northern suburb, I mean, I'm not sure. It's vacant. There's nothing in it.
Well, yeah, that one, but I don't see how it's better than Morton. I mean, you got Fenwick, Proviso East.
How many times I go to the well too much for this Morton deal? You know, I just think there's a lot of bad teams in the Morton sectional.
There's plenty of bad teams in Waukegan. I mean, you look at the Morton sectional, you got Morton, Curie, De La Salle, St. Ignatius, Whitney Young, Proviso East, Fenwick, Oak Park, RB, a Lincoln Park team we saw that's pretty good, a Lindblom team that is not bad at all. Kenwood is over there. I mean, I would definitely take that over the Waukegan sectional.
Well, they have to play each other in the super.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the other aspect of it, is we're talking about the two best sectionals. And I know that happens from time to time, but it sucks for high school basketball. I mean, I don't know. It just depresses me. I look at the Barrington sectional feeding into the DeKalb sectional. I know geographically, I guess it makes sense, but and the other sectional that has been traditionally pretty strong, that looks really weak this year, East Aurora. That sectional has been pretty darn good over the years. At least, you know, top six, seven, eight teams, and man, it is a tough job trying to pick somebody out that's a clear-cut favorite, and I don't think there's a ranked team in that group, and I don't know if they're, I mean, other than West Aurora, that I don't know if there'll be a ranked team in that group other than West Aurora and Hinsdale Central the entire year.
No, there's a chance. I think Lions could creep in. They've had a deceptively good start. You know, they had the loss to Stevenson, but that's their only loss on the season. They've beaten some decent teams. I think they're worth watching. They got some good young players, but yeah, it's definitely not a good one. And frankly, the Bolingbrook sectional on the other side isn't super great either. You know, it's got
that's kind of changed. They've moved the Oswego's and the Bolingbrook and the Plainfields out of, you know, the other sectional and brought in, you know, it's a different mix. So that's going to be new and different for those teams. You know, I try to look at some of the winners for the new shakeup and all that, and you know, one of them, I think, is St. Viator. I mean, we haven't talked much about St. Viator this year, but they get moved out of the tough sectional in North Suburbs and go over to the Barrington sectional, where they're a very viable team now of potentially winning it. And then St. Charles East, which is, you know, really playing well. They're staying where they have been, but, you know, nobody's been moved around and put into their sectional that's of significance. So I think St. Charles East, it's interesting, they just played Geneva, and they'll play in a regional, guaranteed regional in March, so that'll be a good rivalry regional type of game. But I don't know. I mean, you look at it, there's always going to be complaints, and it is a tough, tough job. I don't know the rhyme or reason sometimes for a lot of it.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm always happy when it moves around. I think that's a good idea. Maybe we'd have seen Tyler Ulis at State if it had moved around, you know, a couple of years before this, which I think would have been fun for everybody and good for high school basketball overall. I think one of the things that really stuck out at me was the fact that we're going to likely have Simeon playing a super sectional game at Illinois State, and we're going to have Morgan Park or Bogan playing a super sectional game in Joliet.
I thought of that exact same thing with the Simeon deal. I being in Edwardsville or an O'Fallon or whoever comes out of the South, okay, we get to go and drive 3 hours in the north and go play Simeon up at Illinois State.
Who's gonna be there?
It is not real strong this year. I mean,
who's gonna watch that game?
Oh,
Simeon's not having anybody get down to Bloomington Normal. Maybe ten parents.
it'll be 1,000 people. There'll be some fans in Central Illinois that will be interested just to check out Simeon. I think
they might as well just have it at Pontiac.
I don't know. It's going to be. I don't want to say. I don't know. I just wish we could figure out a way that. I mean, do you like the geography? It comes down to it. Do you like the geography representation? Even though now we might not even have it because the Southern team probably won't be represented.
Yeah, I love the idea of geographical representation. I'm all for it. I feel like the implementation has been a disaster. To me, geographical representation means there shouldn't be two Chicago teams there. I firmly disagree with that. If you're bringing four teams in for a state tournament, you need someone from downstate. Otherwise, it's not a state tournament. And all we basically see are city teams and north and western suburban teams. And occasionally, we'll get somebody from the south or the south suburbs to come through. I mean, and this Simeon thing's made that even worse. It's very likely that the Class 4A state tournament will feature no team in the state from south of 79th Street in Chicago. That's ridiculous.
I like geography representation, but I also like the best teams.
And we don't know who the best teams are.
They got to lose sometime. They're going to lose before they get to the Final Four. And to me, it's the Final Four. I mean, if you got an Elite Eight, then I get a little bit more of the flavor of geographical representation, but I'm down to four schools in 4A. I don't need a team just to be handed a road to get to Peoria easily so I can have a little Southern flavor. I don't.
Well, they're not handed. It's not that. It's the fact that they're not handed a road. It's that the way they get in isn't guaranteed. West is guaranteed of a team.
But if you're staying all to the south, like let's just say no Chicago area team ever went to Illinois State for a super section. It's probably not even feasible because of the numbers of schools. But I'm just arguing that if you have all of these schools from the south battling just to have one school from the south just because, and it's extremely weak 1 year, then I that does nothing for me.
I don't think we know that it's weak.
But if they go to the super sectional and get it handed to them by a Chicago area school, then I'm fine with not having that team in Peoria.
Yeah, I just think once you get into this seeding early or judging, we just don't know. We don't watch those teams down south. I mean, I'll never get that Carbondale team in 1994 that came up and destroyed my Joliet Steelmen. We were, number one in the state, the greatest team, blah, blah, blah. That Carbondale team just whooped us. We don't know about many of those downstate teams.
Yeah, there's definitely been some great teams coming out of the South. There's no question. I mean, from the East St. Louis teams of old, even some of the Edwardsville, the O'Fallons of late. But it's an ongoing debate among coaches and fans and media and state tournament. But I think that the we can't even get into the whole four class thing, but
yeah,
but I'm looking forward to next week, Mike. Next week, let's get into, some of the holiday tournaments and, break those down. That's a fun time of the year. And, we can take a closer look at that.
Yeah, the holiday tournament's definitely my favorite time of year. I've been trying to plan my schedule for that week. Everybody should really take a good look. It's really, you got a great opportunity this year because Proviso West ends before Pontiac begins. So
there's a long stretch.
Yeah.
But that's going to wrap up this week's No Shot Clock podcast. Join us next week again as we take a look and preview many of the holiday tournaments around the state. And as Mike mentioned at the top of the show, and remember, you can subscribe to podcast on iTunes. You can search No Shot Clock. If you do subscribe, go ahead and rate and review us on iTunes. It's also available on Stitcher. For Michael O'Brien, I'm Joe Henriksen. Join us next week for the No Shot Clock podcast.